And we're back, and you are listening to Villain Cast, BJJ Antiheroes, with myself, Chris, the Villain Pains, and Naki, our Jefe, our Shed. And welcome to Reap the Week. But first, a quick thank you to our members at In Theory BJJ, Concept Driven Jiu-Jitsu, for fight commentary, technique and concept videos, private coaching, monthly webinars and Q&A sessions. Please visit www.patreon.com/InTheoryBJJ. Evening, Nak.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I thought that, the way that sounded then, I thought my internet had failed and you were talking robotic, but I think that's just you. feeling fiery again. I felt fiery last week. I'm feeling fiery again this week. How are you feeling? Nice.
Me, you know me, I'm usual same.
Yeah, it's late. It's late. We're recording this at what? 10 to midnight?
Yep.
I know. But we've only been talking for like 20 minutes just because I'm catching up. Did you know, just to begin with, I just want to put this out there, we are now just hit, we're in our birthday month of the return of Reap the Week.
Oh, and interesting.
The return of the podcast. We started up again in 16th of May last year, 2023.
Nice. And we've been consistent since.
Consistent. One a week for the past year. Like,
nice.
What? I know. I'm blown away. So I'm thinking we need to do something special for the birthday episode.
Okay.
So, you know, got a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Figure it out. But we were trying to do something where we'll try and like, I don't know, maybe like record of a weekend or something, or like open, you know, find out. I'll really look into how this Riverside malarkey works and see if we can like put it out to people and if people want to come on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like guests, like, you know, just jump in. Let's test this software. Let's see how many people we can get involved.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want to jump in on the podcast, if you want to come on board and chat with us and let's see how that goes. It'd probably be a clusterfuck. let me know.
Just abusing each other.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be fun. Like people abusing us for what we've done for the past year. So if you're at all interested, please drop me a message on Instagram or something and let's make it happen. Let's do something special in the next couple of weeks. How have you been anyway, now that's out of the way? We had fun doing the webinar the other day. We did the leg lock webinar.
Yeah, for leg locks. It was good. Quite interesting.
It was nice. Going through some of those details again. I felt really good on that. So if anyone hasn't checked that out, that's currently sitting on the In Theory Patreon. It's all the webinars that I've done are available on there, plus all the videos that get made, and there's now some rolling review footage going up online, so I recommend jumping in on there and checking it out. But yeah, the webinar was fun. It went so well, I put up a vote to see if people wanted a different webinar next, and everyone just said, nope, leg locks part two, please. So, like, cool.
Brilliant.
That's 77%. I was like, that's like, yeah, that's what's going to be Labour versus Conservatives in the next election. Like 77%. Complete landslide. How's training for you going?
Training's going well, man. I'm consistent, so I'm happy about that. Back after Ramadan, back into it hard. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, you didn't feel too well after Ramadan, if I remember.
No, I nearly killed myself.
Just with food. Dude, yeah, you looked unwell.
I was unwell, I'm telling you. Until I didn't have that session afterwards, I was like, oh my God. I felt so bad.
So, thing is, like when you said you're ill, I thought, oh no, he's poorly, he's, you know, something wrong with him. Then you said it was self-inflicted just because you ate so much. I was like, oh, right, well, that's your fault then. Like,
yeah, it was purely my fault. I take full responsibility.
Yeah, good. We have some stuff in the mailbag. The first question, so I want to talk about something anyway, and we talked about this in the pre-show, but a question came up, and it did feed in a little bit. Maybe I'm going to like hijack it a little bit. But I'm feeling fiery, and I have to. I'm going to do a video on this anyway. It's going to go on the YouTube channel. But right then, first question, Nak.
Mm-hmm.
Opinion on flying scissors takedown. Can it be done safely at live intensity? And automatically, because you know what I'm going to go through. I read that today and I was like, oh, really?
Yeah, it's dangerous shit, man. There's safer ways you can do stuff. And, you know, you can, if you want to really like that scissor takedown, then there's a rolling version of it where your partner's knee is fine. You know, it's safety at the end of the day. And, you know, even in competition, you got to think like, okay, we're there to beat each other up and whatever and simulate murder, but are we really trying to hurt our opponent? Like, are we really trying to cripple them for life kind of thing? You know what I mean? In some instances, maybe, you know, if you've got some kind of beef, but in general, you know, are you like, you know, it's generally respectful between people. And, you know, I think things like scissors takedowns, and I know you're going to talk about jumping guard and jumping backwards from a single leg, head outside and all that stuff. But yeah, it's partner safety at the end of the day. And, you know, if again, it takes a certain level of skill and timing to do it. And, you know, it's not, I don't teach them. I teach the, like the low version where like in a combat based position, you can jump into the, because the knee's already down. So you're jumping into the back of the hamstring, like reverse. But other than that, no, I avoid it. I mean, if I teach head outside singles, it's always either high crotch or I always make the point of, look, if you're gonna, you can't do this if you're what, blue belt and below, and, you know, avoid it if you can. But yeah, it's...
Just from what you said there, we learned about competition where we're not trying to cripple our opponents. Yeah. And the last couple of fights you've won involved breaking dudes' ankles. don't you come at me saying I'm a hypocrite. That we're trying to look after people.
I'm a hypocrite. No, I mean, like, we're not trying
to badly hurt our opponents.
You know my rule. My rule is very simple. If they don't tap, like that first one that I lost where he caught me with a Komodo accidentally, if I'd actually been a cunt and blasted through his leg, I would have fucking hurt him quite hard. But I put it on and I looked at him, and as I was about to squeeze, he slipped through. I was like, for flip's sake, that split second, I lost that match. And I was like, and since then, mate, my rule is very, very simple. Like, if you don't tap, I'm just going to go for wherever I need to go to in this competition. But I mean, from an intentional point of view, you're not trying to hit your opponent. Yeah. Whereas with a scissor, you know that there's a very, very highly likely chance, the probability is very high that you might miss or they might plant their leg solid, or you might just completely blast through the knee and they're done, man. Like, you're in a wheelchair for 6 months, you know, or more.
Yeah.
And it's not worth it, I don't think.
Yeah. I think competition's a bit of an outlier in the sense of I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm not trying to injure you. I'm going to give you every opportunity because we're playing a game. But we all signed on to the same agreement. Like, you know, I've had my ankles popped 2 or 3 times in competition. I'm like, yeah, it's fair. Like, I didn't tap because I thought I was going to get out, and I didn't. My ankles got ruined because of it. Like, I don't have issues with the guys who did it. I don't blame them at all. Like, it's entirely my fault. I should have been a bit smarter about it. And so I look at it the same way. Like, you know, I give people opportunity to tap. If they don't tap and I end up going for their leg, well, not my fault. You should have not been a little weirdo and kept going. But at the same time, so first part. So when I was going back in time now, I do appreciate the irony of it all. Is that when I was in the fire, I was the health and safety lead. Which I find that so hilarious. Like, you know, but it's almost like some sort of like weird Batman thing. Like, by day I was like some mild mannered health and safety guy making sure doors didn't catch people's fingers. And at night I was like dragging people's faces across the floor. I'm like,
yeah, it is ironic, actually. Very ironic.
I did appreciate at the time, like, this is this is odd. This is a, maybe I'm balancing myself out. But one thing's, I mean, I remember being taught when I did my qualifications for IOSH, which is Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. So boring. And watch the amount of people, I'm going to look at the statistics on this podcast afterwards, and the amount of people have just clicked off. It's like, no, don't talk to me about occupational safety and health. There's people like running their cars off the road right now just to escape what they're listening to. They've got to get to the button fast enough. So one of the things when I was taught about it was the difference between hazard and risk. And it was interesting because, like, it's you know, you have to understand it to manage it. And so the guy I was teaching it, who would hold a pen in his hand, and he said, right, a hazard with this pen is I'm going to stab you in the eye. I'm like, cool, okay. That's a hazard. And so you look at the hazard and go, what's the injury from this hazard? And, you know, blindness, or whatever, you know, he's just, you know, however he stabs me. And that, like, doesn't change as in, like, you know, same if you get hit by a car. Like, if you get hit by a car at 30 miles an hour, that's a hazard. Like, what could happen to you. And then you have risk, which is the chance of it happening, the likelihood. And so he said, like, with this pen, like, you know, I could stab you in the eye. The chance of me doing it is very, 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 very low. And so you times risk by hazard on like a table. I mean, I'm sure people have worked in various situations have seen these, and you get your outcome. Like, you know, you what's the chance of, you know, out of five of him stabbing me in the eye? Well, one, let's say, zero. What's the damage from him stabbing me in the eye? A four out of five. Yeah, I'm not going to die, but it's going to be causing some severe injury. So we've got like a, you know, a zero or four on the table. So it's low, like, you know, low. I don't really have to manage that off. Same as, you know, if you're getting hit by a car, 30, 40 miles an hour, death, it's a five. If you're someone who likes to walk far away from the pavement in daylight with, you know, high visibility jackets on, chance of you getting hit by a car, one. So it's pretty low, you don't have to really deal with this. But if you're someone who likes jogging in the middle of the road at night, in the pitch black with black clothes on, yeah, a bit higher maybe. So
you're looking to be run over then.
Exactly, that's the risk. Like, the hazard hasn't changed. You're still getting hit by a 40 mile an hour car, but the risk is a lot higher because you're a lunatic like running in the road. And the reason that's kind of like important for jiu-jitsu, and I think, you know, if people are still listening, hopefully they can see the relationship here, is that we are people who do violence. Violence is the hazard. And so all the techniques we have are various levels of violence. And you look at the injury factor of what my violent act could do. And then you look at risk, which you've got likelihood of that happening, which, you know, an uncontrolled technique like flying scissors is a high risk factor. And then you've got aggression, which I think is also a likelihood factor. So, you know, you could have something that is highly aggressive, level five, but incapable of violence, like a baby who's like going nuts and trying to bite your nose. You're like, oh, you know, okay, yeah, it's going nuts, but nothing's happening to me. Like, but that's the thing of jiu-jitsu, and this is like where, you know, as a coach, it kind of balances up, is that you have, you know, we are doing violence. And we have to manage one of those two things. We either manage the violence, we remove things that are overly, could overly cause injury, you know, the injury factor is too high. Like, you know, and we'll talk about jumping guillotines in a minute. Or we remove risk and we remove aggression. And I think that's one thing that, you know, we have to look at what the two things we can manage. And that's one thing that I think is very important in the gym. And that's going to come on to my second point, is we remove aggression. Like, you can be as, you know, we're pretty highly violent, but we're removing the aggressive aspect, which is that likelihood aspect. Like, we're going to take care of the other person. We're not going to mow them down and, like, run the risk of hurting them. You know, we're trying our best to, because it's, you know, like I said, it's like a table, like a times factor. And that's why, like, beginners are so you have to really get in a beginner's head really early, because if you have a beginner who's capable of a little bit of violence, like a level 2 out of 5, like they can do takedowns and, you know, crank shit already because they're, you know, they're human, and they're being overly aggressive, so like a 4 on the aggression meter, well, that person's like an 8. Like, that's now medium. That's worrying. Like, that person has to be dealt with. Either completely fucking tie their arms up and hog tie them, and leave them on the floor and remove the violence, which I can't do. Or I do my best to control their aggression, because that's, you know, go lower that, you know. So now they're still at level, you know, 2 on the violence level, but now I've removed their aggression, and it's only going to be a 2 on the table. I think that's when it comes to sort of like jumping guillotines and flying scissors and those other things, like where you can't control your body weight flying through the air, and the violence and the hazard factor is so high of blowing through someone's knee, snapping someone's neck. Yeah, you're putting this high likelihood factor on it as well, something that is, you know, highly dangerous. You're going to hurt someone, and it's not worth it, because at the same time, and this is, I think, is one of the biggest things, I think, to controlling aggression, and we talked about gym culture in the past, like, we're on the same team. We're Manchester United. And
no, you know, you could have picked any other team but them. Come on,
okay, I'm trying to be universal here, because there's people in different countries. And everyone knows who Manchester United are.
Okay, I'll let you off.
I'm not going to say Villa. Stoke. so, like, you know, we're all on the same team. We're Manchester United. And we're doing training. And, you know, there's 20 people on the team or whatever. We split off into groups of 10 and we're going to play against each other. Like, I'm not going to hack down in training. Even though it's a game we're playing against each other, I'm not going to hack down someone on my team. Because what would be the fucking point? And I think when you see it from that perspective of those people in the room with you are in your team. Like, you're doing training like in a football ground. And you've split off. Like, what the fuck are you doing hacking down your own team? Like, I'm not going to slide tackle and blow the knees out of someone on my own team. Just because we're in training. Like, I can separate the fact out, like, you know, if we're against Liverpool, yeah, maybe I'm going to slide tackle and hack someone's knees out. But I'm not going to do it on a Saturday training on my own team when we're just split into two groups.
Like, you lose training partners.
Exactly. Well, no, as in, like, what kind of maniacal cunt? Oh, my God, that's the first time I've used that one. I wonder if that's going to get, like, YouTube dealt with. I'm usually quite good, but... Oh, damn, like, maybe that's just how wired up I am on this one. Like, what kind of maniacal ball bag sly tackles their own team member on a Saturday training? Like, they'd get kicked out of that team super fast. And that's how I then look at someone, you know, like I said, I shouted at someone for the first, like, you know, properly laid into someone pretty loud on Monday for the first time. And it's because, like, yeah, you're doing something which high risk factor, high hazard violence factor. So you're pretty high on my fucking table of fucking misery right now. Yeah, I'm going to fucking lay into you, because what the fuck are you doing pulling that kind of shit out of the bag on your own teammate? Like, put that one the fuck away. And we've left the tap out era behind of, like, you know, we all truck and train hard and let's go for it. Like, no. You know, as a coach, it's, you know, it's on my, you know, it's, you know, we're both coaches. It's on our watch. So it's our remit to make sure that the people in the room are safe at the end of the day. And you manage safety through hazard and risk. And so if you see some mad fucker jumping for, like, flying scissors or flying guillotines or, like, again, like you said earlier, like, you know, I mentioned that anyone, I'll say this out loud and you fucking come at me. Anyone who teaches head outside single legs and standing guillotines or jumping guillotines, you're negligent. that you're negligent to your athletes. Right? Especially if you're doing it to beginners. High-level people have got some level of control. Yeah, okay. But if you're teaching new people this, you're a negligent coach.
Yeah, agreed. Not to beginners. Beginners, yeah, none of that shit.
When you can grab hold of someone's neck on a head outside single, fall back into guard, you think, yeah, I can get a guillotine for me. I saw Dustin Poirier do it. And you end up snapping some fucker's neck because you don't know what you're doing. Like I said last week, we had some, you know, a couple of new kids who, in the second session, because since I don't want them to do submissions, they saw a submission on YouTube, an armbar and a rear naked, had no idea how they worked and cranked it on the one kid who was a bit weaker. I lost my shit. I said, if I ever see you fucking do submissions like that again, if you do submissions in the next year, I'm kicking you out of my gym. Like, that's it. Oh, it wired me up. Yeah. So yeah, flying scissors.
Dangerous shit.
Yeah. Like, there's other things you can do. There's other things out there. Like,
there's a much safer version of doing that same thing, man. Like, you just got to roll rather than snap.
Yeah, as I said, using the football analogy, there's better ways to slide tackle someone. You don't have to hack their knees out by flying in from a distance.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ. Like John Jones, I imagine he doesn't do oblique kicks in the gym.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when he's like trying to stamp through someone's knee. Yeah, he does it, you know, live. It's like people, like, it's hard to train elbows.
Yeah, because you don't want to hurt, you can't do them in training, man, elbows, because you'll hurt each other quite bad. You'll just cut each other up.
Exactly. Like, you can't train, like, you know, like, I don't see Matt Brown doing the thing he did to Diego Sanchez.
Diego Sanchez, yeah. Oh, my God.
Regular training. I hold him up by the face and then just, like, elbowing him.
That was dangerous, that was.
Yeah, he ain't doing that, like, you know, on a Thursday evening, is he, with his regular training partners? He ain't saying to some white belt, come here, stay still. Like, it's like knocking him into the floor like fucking plants. I don't think that's what he's doing. So, yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm going to do a video on that because I think... Yeah, it winds me up, man. Winds me up. Oh, I like this. I think you'll enjoy this one, Knack. I'm going to leave you to run on this one because it's a crazy question as well. I like it. I like how people are seeing things these days. So thank you for people sending in these questions. Should BJJ matches have a wall or pit karate combat style? The out of bounds sucks.
Yeah, man. Fucking, I 100% agree with this. Like, this out of bounds bollocks, because we don't play, like, I've seen, like, over the years now, how when I go and watch competitions, well, when I compete, or when we go with other, like, guys to compete, is like how a lot of these geezers use the rules to fucking win some fights. Technically and even athletically or physically, you'd probably be better than your opponent, but using the fucking rules, how these guys do this out of bounds shit, they manage to get the wins. And I've been gringoed by in this with this rule as well before, where I've managed to find, get a takedown, it's gone out of bounds, and I've lost points and this, that, the other. And, you know, it pisses me off, you don't understand. And, you know, like, I think that, yeah, I agree, there should be some kind of, you know, something. I like the karate combat idea, to be fair, because I've seen some of their matches and how they pin each other over the wall, man. Oh, it's mad.
I agree. I do think there should be something to contain the fight. Logistically.
Yeah, it's the logistics of it, isn't it?
It's a logistics problem. Yeah. If you could, like, honeycomb up some cages or something, then absolutely. I was even thinking that, like, you know how, like, when you go to, like, a gig or something, you got, like, the barrier that holds people in?
Yeah.
Because it's got, like, a T-frame at the bottom. I was thinking maybe those, you can put mats over them. That just barricade people's mats in. I wonder how expensive they are. Yeah, I'd say we are doing the best we can in the situations we have.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if we could all have MMA cages in... Because you look at, like, you know, the big competitions, like, you know, Worlds or Euros or the Opens or whatever, and you've got like 10 matches going on at any one time. Imagine, and you've got to run 10 matches just to get through the number of competitors who signed on. Imagine how much extra space it would take to put barriers around everything.
Yeah, that'd be mad.
Especially like safe barriers as well, and they'll have to be matted and stuff like that. It can't be like a...
Yeah.
And even though if you had like the cage wall kind of thing, you know, because then that runs risk factors of getting people's fingers caught and, oh, it's my health and safety thing kicking in again.
Yeah.
Yeah, logistically, rolling out a few Fuji mats, not an issue. But yeah, sticking up cage walls and stuff like that, it would be great. And if we could engineer that problem out, fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you see that video of the kid who, I think he went for like a triangle or something, and so the other guy picked him up and slammed him through the judges' table?
Yeah. It's quite a viral. That's quite a viral video. That is.
Yeah, it's hilarious. What was the kid thinking?
Fuck off.
That's some impressively mental shit right there. Maybe it'll stop things like that happening. Maybe just break his back over the wall and throw him out. Although to be fair, like when we were on Monday, because we've got the ring, like a boxing ring, we train out training as well. And I tried to put a kid through the ropes the other day.
Yeah, I'm watching.
I had him like a Tommy Nag. And then like I realised that I was going to put him through the ropes. I just thought, I'm going to safely deposit him halfway through the ropes. And I thought, do I put him all the way through? Nah, I'll bring him back. And he's there like, unable to stop this thing from happening. I was going to post him like a letter. Oh my God. Yeah, I'd love to. I think it'd be great. I think we should have things like that. Opinion on... Okay. You are a qualified teacher of human beings. I'm just someone who acts like one. Opinion on what is the worst way to teach/learn jiu-jitsu?
No such thing, I don't think. I think everybody does... I think there's so many different ways to learn that. I think people get so like something that really irritates me is like, now, you know, you said you were hot today. Now this one's got me hot because.
Oh, good. Oh, I like it.
It's a question where like, so with some people, you might not have the facilities to be able to learn like you could learn if you were in a different place. So, you know, sometimes it's a problem where it's not in your hands and you've got to learn the way with what you've got available, you know. And then you could be in some places where there's such an abundance of ways you can learn from. And then, you know, you're trying to pick which ways to learn. It's like just learn, you know, the more you think about it, the more you do it, the more you read about it, the more you try, you know, different things, and the more time and effort you put into it, the better you're going to get. People are always looking for the shortcut, man, with these things where, oh, what's the best way to learn, and what's the best way to train, and what's this and what's that. Like, a lot of it's trial and error because everybody's different, man. And, you know, you try and do what the athletes do if you want to get to that level, or you try and do as a hobbyist, like, you just find your own pattern, your own schedule, and what you can do. I think people get so hell-bent on trying to find that shortcut, you know, where they can just propel fast, you know. I understand, but it's a lot. You got to put the graft in, man. You got to put the graft in.
Yeah. I agree. Like, there has to be. I agree that a lot of it, you know, a lot of the teaching is going to come down to the coaching. Like, we've come across shit coaches before.
Oh yeah.
And I'd say that the worst is someone who unquestionably follows how they were taught and just imitates. I say like that is the worst, because that person's not innovating and caring about the athletes in the room.
Yeah,
they're just 100%. Parroting. I say that's the worst. Right, and I'm going to leave that open to
interpretation.
All coaching styles, yeah, because like, that's the thing. Is like the worst style of coaching is the person who doesn't care about individual athletes. Because I've been teaching privates now for, you know, 7 or 8 years, and a lot of the people who come through and book me, yeah, I get, you know, a few people who've done jiu-jitsu and want certain things solving, but a lot of the people who come through are beginners who just don't feel comfortable in a class setting, which means I get all manner of ability levels come through the room, And some, you know, I adjust the lessons accordingly. Like some people get a lot more kind of, I have to like explain things to them. But other people, we just spar for an hour, and I almost, you know, I adjust the role to help them work on the things that I think they need to work on. I leave them, I play games with them.
That sounds wrong.
Well, no, I'm taking the piss out of ecological there.
I know.
And so I leave, you know, it's find the right tool for the right person. Sometimes, you know, much to my own frustration of myself, it takes me a while to find the right thing for the right person. Like, you know, there was one kid who I thought would be better suited to playing more guard. But in fact, you know, he found it very hard to kind of get that dexterity over his legs. It wasn't until I made him do more wrestling, but then he had an issue with pulling the trigger. I was like, right, well, okay, well, he's got, you know, his wrestling feels a bit better, but he's got, you know, issue pulling the trigger. And so, you know, completely against what you'd think, like, you know, with the best way of opening him up, I showed him videos of Jordan Burroughs. I said, watch, as soon as this Jordan gets low, he just goes and he doesn't come back up for air. Like, he just runs the other guy down. It's tenacity. It's that commitment. And I was like, right, I want you to, you know, imitate Jordan Burroughs. I want you to imagine you're Jordan Burroughs. And all of a sudden, like, he was running me down. I was like, good. Okay, now, don't let me get my hips above yours. And he just kept on running me down and keeping on top when he was down there. I was like, brilliant, fixed. But he wouldn't put that in a regular kind of coaching program. I was right, we were just going to watch videos of the style I think would help you if you adopted it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I wouldn't do that for everyone. So it's definitely a case of, you know, find the, care about the people in the room and find the way that opens up their potential. And like I said, at the same time, it's down to the motherfuckers in the room. Like, we, you know, we're both driven human beings. That we get up and we fucking go for it. And then you got fuckers who want to be carried. I'm like, sorry. Like, have a bit of personal responsibility. Like, you know, people who, you know, like, we had a question last week about strength and power in competition and jiu-jitsu. I'm like, yeah, being physically fitter in a sport helps. So then don't whinge if your cardio and your strength is shit. If you haven't been putting the hours in training, like, if you want it, get up. Wake your ass up in the morning. Go to bed early. Like, don't fucking whinge that, oh, yeah, I had shit cardio at competition. Well, how many times are you getting up at 5 a.m. going for a run? Well, I've got work in the morning. And most of us do. Most fucking UFC fighters do. Was it Pantoja still driving for Uber? Like, despite you working in the UFC?
This is your Goggins little Tekker anyway. He's just like, your Goggins rant, this is.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, as in, yeah, I was... Goggins did make me feel lazy, but at the same time, you know, I said last week, I was getting up at ridiculous time in the morning to go swim a mile and go work out in the gym before I go to work for a day.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, when I used to do 12-hour shifts in the fire service, you know, 5 a.m. till 5 p.m., I didn't have, you know, because I'd be doing jiu-jitsu in the afternoon. I'd then go to the gym from midnight until like 3 a.m., and like work out in the night instead, like 24-hour gyms, and then I go to work. I'd be
nice,
pick up naps where I could. But I'm like, a couple of nights a week I'd do it that, and I'm like, don't whinge. Don't, if you want it, like, get up off your ass, because no one's going to carry you there.
Yep. It's Gaines o'clock, motherfucker, let's go.
Yeah, personal responsibility. Final question. Control points in the gi. Just an extension. Is it just an extension of your other control points?
More or less.
The gi neck. Yeah.
More or less, yes. More or less, yes. But I have, like, there's more cloth, more tools, more weapons for you to use. And you use all of them because they're going to grab yours, mate. They're going to grab your lapel. They're going to twist it up in different ways. So it's a race of whoever can grab the other person's lapel and start twisting them. Because then, it's again, you're dictating the pace of the match. And the gi, I think, it comes down to a lot of the lapel play. If you watch the highest level guys, you know, straight away they're stripping grips and they're trying to establish their own kind of strength in how they're going to grip the lapel. So yeah, in the gi, I think that makes a big difference. Where if you can be, and it's hand fighting, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's gi hand fighting where you've got to use the lapels. And yeah, like, you know, you can cheat a lot in the gi, like, you know, like pre-COVID cheating. But, you know, like, for example, getting like the handcuff, you know, there's a very nice, easy way of getting handcuff in the gi where you just literally just grab under the armpit, or like collar ties, you grab behind the collar. You know, they're really strong, powerful grips made stronger by the cloth. So, yeah, use them. Use them.
I'd say that, and this is the thing, like, you know, we've had various people come through our doors over the years. I think transition, like, there's a weird transition between gi and no gi. I think one way is easier than the other. Because no gi will always work in the gi. No gi people just get frustrated that they can't. Like, it's not that their shit doesn't work. Like, no gi shit will always work. But it's a case of, like, they feel restricted when they're in the gi. And that's what makes them sad. Like, they can't just, like, jump around and be mental and athletic as they once were in no-gi. Like, they get a bit locked up and they feel claustrophobic. I mean, we've all, you know, we've, most people join the gym no-gi, eventually get a gi on and go, oh, I fucking hate it. But then swinging the other way around, there's been, I've met plenty of people who do only gi, who say they can't do no-gi because they don't know where to grip. And I'm like, that is dumb.
Yeah,
That is some dumb shit. And I, you know, I said, you know, in the past that a lot of guys who go from no gi into gi, they end up fighting the jacket. Like, they end up just, you know, you could almost, like, step out of the jacket and they wouldn't notice. They just carry on fighting the jacket and they become obsessed with fighting the clothing. And I'm just like, just do what you'd normally do and just reinforce the grip of your hand on the fabric. Like, if you're going to get an underhook, just grab the cloth. If you're going around the back of the head, grab the lapel. Just do what you'd normally do. And then we can kind of go from there. The gi grips are just allegories for what you wanted anyway. Like, I needed your leg. Well, I'm just now going to reinforce that grip by grabbing the cloth around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's all it is. Like, the rules remain the same of grappling. Like, you know, flanking the elbows or controlling the spine, that hasn't changed. I just have something that reinforces the grip now, allows me to hold on to it for a bit longer. I mean, shit, Preet plays some no-gi spider guard. He grabs the fingers instead. And so there's no difference. Like, that's what, you know, we do it. Maybe we don't talk about it as much as we should, but, one of our friends from many years ago, Darius, when he shows a bit of Turkish oil wrestling. And for anyone who hasn't come across Turkish oil wrestling before, I'm pretty sure you cover each other in oil, and it's the first person to get the other person to the floor and, like, either pin them down or put your hand in their pants.
No, we haven't done that. We haven't done that.
No, we haven't done Turkish oil wrestling. That Darius didn't come in with a, you know, a,
I wanted to make that clear because that's what it sounded like. We haven't done that.
Yeah.
Disclaimer.
Darius came in for a seminar and with like three big bottles of vegetable oil and went, come on then, guys, slip and slide. No, that didn't happen. But he, you know, it's easy to kind of like listen to that and like poo-poo it as something ridiculous. But at the same time, like, one thing that he was showing us was, like, you know, they have a series of bone grips. They grab each other by bones. And we've just kind of adopted it and never thought twice about it, you know, in the past 8 years. But then when you realise that most people don't do that, like, we grab each other by the ulnar radial. I grab you by your jaw from behind your head. pretty sure I've gripped some sucker by the collarbone before as well. Like, and the grips that, you know, doesn't matter how sweaty or slippery or anything like that you are, that ain't coming off. And so that's how I look at it. Like, my grips only change by what friction is available to me. Like, if I have high friction, aka gi, I'll grab it. If I don't, I'll just grab the arm. If I don't even have that because you're sweaty or oiled up, depending on what we're doing, I'll grab the bones. But the grip I want hasn't changed. I still want that elbow. How I hold it completely changes. Yeah, so I think, like, maybe we need to do a seminar on that, a webinar, talking about grabbing people's bones.
That sounded wrong.
What if that's like, that's the forbidden oil check?
Yeah, forbidden oil check.
That's the exhaust inspection.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
I remember teaching a single leg from the back before, where you like go behind them, like almost like you do like a sweeping single and slip around the back.
Yeah.
I remember teaching a certain person that you're supposed to have your head in the middle of their ass when you do it. That was a joke. And she did it. And she was like, this is uncomfortable. I was like, we call it the mechanic, because like, you got the oil check, but if you really get your head under the hood, we call it the mechanic.
Oh my God, I wish you did that so much.
And I was like, no, don't put your face there.
I'm on mute because I'm just laughing my head off.
You keep falling out, and I'm like, is he muting it, or is he like falling out of the
conversation? No, I'm muting it because I'm just laughing my head off.
Dude, yeah, like, do I feel bad? Now, no. It's gone. I've purged it from my system. But yeah, the mechanic, when the oil check just doesn't get in far enough, get your head under the hood. Oh. As much as we also say, like, you know, we should be kind to our athletes and you know, look after them, I also think that shit's funny. It's like scene from Kung Pao. Like, we purposely taught him wrong as a joke. That's how I feel. Well, that's been Jimmy's mailbag. Like maybe that, especially like, because you know, we haven't done video today, but maybe for like future episodes, maybe I can like get one made up of like this little bag, and like that can sit on camera, like with Jimmy Savile's face on it.
Oh no!
What's in the bag today, Jimmy? I as well, like, you know, I think UK listeners kind of second or third on like our demographics. So maybe some of the people listening to this don't know who Jimmy Savile is, and they're going to go get curious in a minute and go on his Wikipedia page and be like, oh my God, why are they talking about him? It's because he had a show in like the 70s or 80s. Jim will fix it. And I'm sure he probably had a mailbag, because that's how he got into shows those days, to say like what your problems were. We just haven't caught up with current events in the last 30 years. Well, you did what? I'm sure I'll see you at training tomorrow, sir, or today.
Yes, indeed. This comes indeed. Out.
This has been a fun episode, as always. We're both feeling heated. I think we needed to go decompress, sit in a quiet room, think about what we've done.
Yeah.
We broke some boundaries today. Swear words we've never approached before. Anger levels. I was actually thinking as well, this is me, like, you know, just because I get bored in the day. I wonder if we could do a, because we've both got headsets. I'm pretty sure you use the same headset. Like, why don't we do a podcast, but we're like, while we're playing PS5 games.
Yeah, like a, chat on, like a Twitch thing, there. Twitch stream thing.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. Yeah, we're trying to do a podcast while trying to play a game. talk jujitsu. Yeah, I was like, maybe. But I thought, I think there's no people who would be interested in me and you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe one day. But yeah, anyone interested in jumping in for like the birthday podcast, I'll find a way of doing it. And let's have a giggle. Let's have some fun. If you've got a mobile phone and some headphones, I'm pretty sure you can jump in. Just drop me a message on Instagram. I'll put it on Discord and various places if I figure it out. But yeah, thank you, sir. This has been another episode of Reap the Week.
No problemo. See you later.
See you tomorrow, dude.
See you tomorrow.